Welcome to Women in Translation, a series showcasing the richness of European women authors, translators, and more.
Good morning, I am Hans-Gorger Ruprecht. This is CKCU Literary News.
It's absolutely wonderful welcoming Oksana Maksymchuk today to our show. Hello, Oksana Maksymchuk.
Hello.
You were lucky to be able to leave a few weeks ago, Ukraine. Yes, madam, I have to say this. We are talking to each other and we are recording our conversation on May 8th, 2022, while the world is with your country, Ukraine, including heads of state and leaders of government, among them the Prime Minister of Canada, coming to Kyiv in order to lend their support to the heroic struggle and fight of resistance against the Russian invasion, which brought terrible destructions, human sufferings, and war crimes to many cities and regions of your great country. So, Oksana Maksymchuk, I cannot help greeting you from Canada with this in mind. Thank you so much for being on our show today.
Thank you for this invitation.
Well, look, it's really a great honor. And maybe we could agree that it is also within the broad framework of literature that what we are sharing today ought to be understood and can be expressed. I really think it is suitable to talk to each other about creative writing within the context of contemporary Ukrainian literature. And in particular, of course, about your own work and achievements as a poet, a writer, a scholar, as an award-winning literary translator and recipient of the National Endowments for the Arts Translation Fellowship. You are the author of many poems that have been published by, of course, also English language reviews. They are so numerous, I can only mention, which occurred to me as really outstanding and remarkable, because it happened this year that your translations on poems have been published, for instance, by the Cincinnati Review Spring Edition of 2022, the New Orleans Review, and the Hawaii Pacific Review, and many, many others. You are a published author of essays about literature and the art of writing, but your name has been in the news, and I use this term purposefully because you were in the news even here in Canada on a famous, very famous show, Our Big Brother.
Namely, quite recently on CBC Ideas.
And where precisely the issue of poetry during war times was at the center of the discussion and the debate. You are with Max Rozochinski, the co-editor of an anthology called Words for War, War Poems from Ukraine, Academic Press 2017, which is an anthology now being quoted and discussed in many countries, including, of course, in the UK. The Guardian had a long article about this. But you're also the editor of the very important anthology a bilingual collection of poems dedicated to the victims of Nazi crimes and the massacre of 1941, called Voices of Babin Yar, which is perhaps one of the most horrific, the most scaring, and the most upsetting place in Ukraine, where we remember the horror of the Shoah. Now, I could go on listing articles and publications by Oksana Maksimchuk, but please help us, help our listeners to grasp the range of your itinerary as a scholar, as I said, as a writer, as an essayist, as a translator, and I should like to emphasize as a scholar, because you are holding a PhD from a famous American university. So could you just draw a little bit the way you came as a young woman in your country to address the issue of words for war, war poems from Ukraine?
Thank you so much for this wonderful introduction, Hans, and for this very thoughtful contextualization of the anthology and the rest of the work I do. I did start out as just a Ukrainian language poet. I started writing poems very early on, and in part it's because my dad is a professional reciter of poetry. He is actually the people's actor or people's artist of Ukraine, and that award was given to him for his recitation of Ukraine's foremost poets, Taras Shevchenko and Ivan Franko. So there are two giants, two pillars on which you may say the rest of the Ukrainian literary poetic tradition.
Yes.
And I think being exposed to those rhythms and rhymes from early childhood as I was practicing was very crucial to my formation as somebody who doesn't just hear poetry, but also perceives the point of poetry, what poetry is for. And that often is giving or amplifying the voices of people who cannot speak for themselves in the current moment, maybe because they're overwhelmed, or maybe because they don't have any platforms on which they can enjoy these voices. So I moved to the States when I was 15 to go to a university high school, and I also went to college in the States. I majored in peace and conflict studies and in philosophy, and then I went on to pursue my PhD in philosophy at Northwestern, and part of my motivation was actually to study how language is affected by various disruptive phenomena. So I worked on Heidegger, and then eventually I wrote my dissertation on Plato.
Okay.
Thinking about all of these issues, I guess during many years that you pursue a PhD, you don't really like, it's so disciplined, right? It's what the discipline requires, that you really have to suppress your creative energy. So I published two books of poetry before entering grad school. And then during graduate school, I didn't write all that much. Mm-hmm. And then after I defended my dissertation, I think that consumed most of my creative energy. That's when I started writing again. And I also started writing in the English language. So there was a change of language that was maybe motivated by the fact that I became a mother. And at some point, I decided to speak not only Ukrainian, but also English with my child.
Yes.
So in many ways, I am an English language poet who is just about 5 years old. That's when I first started publishing. And I would say that my most prolific period of writing has actually been in the past year. So while I have different projects that I'm working on.
Sorry to interrupt you, but we would like to hear about one project in particular, because it connects with what you're just saying. You were a writer in residence at the Institute of Advanced Studies of the European University in Budapest, right? And you were working what we call in critical language on a bestiaire.
On a bestiary.
Right? Just tell us a little bit how you came to this idea to take up again this ancient form of combining poetic creativity and visions of animal life and the symbolic of animals.
Right. So something that I think quite a bit about together with my son is the extinction of the animal kinds. And I think it's a very good format to reflect on this problem. So to the extent that we must bear witness as, or our generation must bear witness to the extinction of a lot of animals, and to some extent it may be irreversible, I thought that it gives this good set of categories within which to place different problems that we can conceptualize having to do with not just extinctions of the species, but also ways of life and ways of thinking and ways of keeping track of archives, of documents, of ideas. So
yes,
it was meant to be this project in the form of decomposing fragments of, say, passages from Aristotle incorporated into poems, or traces from the medieval bestiaries, once again incorporated into some kinds of lyrical essays. But that project is sort of frozen at the moment, because I started writing poems about awaiting the war. We were living in Lviv in Ukraine for the past year after my fellowship at the CEU, and in many ways my focus shifted to this more immediate danger, and not just the extinction of the species and the world and the diversity of the inhabited world as we know it, but the more pressing danger to
yes.
the lives of the particular nation or particular people.
And the culture and the language, heritage, and amazing record of the contributions to civilization precisely in Ukrainian, art, music in particular, also
right.
in architecture, and a long faith tradition. This includes a long-standing Jewish cultural tradition. Let's not forget that there is Czernowiecki, there is Paul Celan, there is Rosa Ausländer, who were born in what is nowadays Ukraine, you know? So this is absolutely what is happening now is precisely a fight for preserving this great heritage. And of course, the language, which is your first language.
Right. One of the interesting things that the city of Lviv did last year was that it announced the city held many events in honor of Stanislav Lem, who was also a Lvivian, and he was deported as a Pole.
Yes.
To the current geographical Poland after the Soviet invasion in 1945. But before that, he had survived the German occupation in Lviv, and he kept a very interesting diary that he formed into this book that's called High Castle.
Mm-hmm.
So in many ways, it traces the story of the city under occupation, and he was hiding in various cellars and in various basements and attics, apart from his family, because every member was protected by some other group. He didn't know when he is going to see them next, if they're going to survive. At some point, he was cleaning out the corpses from the prison where they had been shot, just prisoners of war had been shot.
Can you believe it?
And tortured. And so reading all of this in the wake of the war has had this effect that a lot of the things that are happening now, that we're discovering now, have been already described before. They have happened before. So it has this very uncanny effect. And it's similar with the book we've translated, The Voices of Baban Yar by Mariana Kianowska. All of those things seemed really distant, like horrendous accounts of human suffering that were difficult to believe. But reading them now, they're actually very present, very immediate. Like they could have been written just under the siege of Bucha or in Irpin. A lot of these people
exactly.
who are expecting to be killed and just don't know how it's going to happen.
Yes. Oksana Maksymchuk, we would be really thankful to you if you could read for us a poem of your choice that suggests in poetic terms how you were personally coping with that, what you just implied. Would you like to do this for us?
Yes, thank you. I will read a poem that I wrote over the past couple of months.
Wonderful. So here you go.
Advice to a young poem. Stay little poem, fine and sharp like a charm, mysterious, a maker of no sense. Fewer things can go wrong with fewer lines, fewer promises broken in fewer words. Little ones trickle out of the cage through bars one can barely see, seep through the capillaries in a windowless and evasive mind that's devised ways to protect itself against spells and magic. Helpless yet busily resilient, they form like clouds, woven of gauze and mucus, dealing in recovery of broken hope, delivery of the forgotten, inessential yet dear. Little ones of no weight are enough to transform as one peers into the sky to the sound of an air raid siren, falls asleep in a bathtub, dances inside a cellar.
Thank you very much for this reading. Oksana Maksymchuk, I should like to come back to a remark of yours, which you made at the very beginning when you were talking about your doctoral research and your thoughts about language. And you mentioned Martin Heidegger's philosophy of language. And I would like to see your position within this context, namely that for Heidegger, and he takes as an example Hölderlin, and most likely must have discussed this with Paul Celan, who visited him, and with René Char and other writers, he saw the poetic means of expression, a way towards language. A famous essay by Heidegger is called Auf dem Weg zur Sprache. How does your full awareness of that, what the anthology of Voices of Baban Yar includes, and of what Words for War, war poems from Ukraine, how does this inform or determine the way language, poetic language, may become in a new way meaningful to you as a writer and as a critic, you know?
Right. Thank you for this question. So Heidegger conceives of language as something like a home for a human being, right?
Yes.
Realm within which the human being comes into her own or his own. But this home, in his view, is often corrupted by other forms of speech. So I think that is what is interesting to me in the application to words for war and war poetry. When language is no longer a home, when you are alienated from your language, and when you no longer feel like in the language you can be yourself, when a language actually poses an obstacle to authenticity, an obstacle that you must somehow overcome in a language itself. So to me, a lot of the poems that we have collected in Words for War actually speak to this desire to be at home in your own language again, to make sense of yourself and your community in the language again, despite the brokenness and the disruptions inherent in the language that had been changed by the experience and the discourse of war.
May I ask you perhaps the most challenging question for me, and I could imagine for your fellow citizens nowadays, in these days, would you include the concern for the survival of your culture and heritage and traditions, but in particular also of the language in a free, independent country, given the fact that historically speaking, I'm thinking about that what happened since the end of the Second World War during the Soviet Union, where Ukraine was part of the Soviet Union, and at a time when Russian was also not only spoken, it was an official language. I don't dare to ask you, but tell me if it is for you as well. You're a different, of a different generation, but is it a cultural kind of fact, a fact of cultural life, so to speak, that yes, in Ukraine, Russian is a spoken language, and there was a time where we had to learn Russian, where it was inevitable that we must speak Russian in order to succeed in our own country. Is this something which connects with your concern for language and the new creative advances of the poetic discourse? I know it's a terrible question, very difficult, but if you feel it would take more time, we could have another show on this. But just a few thoughts about that. What is...
Yeah, I'll just, if you don't mind, I'll just give some sort of disconnected thoughts, because you're right, this is the kind of question that you could write a dissertation on. But my husband, Max, with whom we have co-edited the anthology, he is a Russian speaker from Crimea.
Yes.
He actually thought of himself as Russian for much of his life until maybe 2014. And his family, his parents, who still live in Simferopol, they still think of themselves as Russian because they're the bearers of that culture. And I think it's not just the language, but also a specific political culture that is associated very closely with the language of those who live in those places, that I think has made him turn away maybe from his Russian identity, even though he still continues to be a bilingual or a trilingual speaker. So it's not that he rejected his language. We have, however, decided not to teach our own child Russian for the reasons of it being really, how would I say it, heavy with particular type of ideology, which is an imperialist ideology.
Yes.
And the culture we wanted to pass on to him was somewhat different. Of course, it's ironic because he is still an English language speaker, and a lot of the English language literature is also imbued with this imperialist spirit. And being an American, he is also a citizen of something that is an empire that's also involved in various unwarranted adventures and exploits abroad. So there is, I guess, a close connection between language and culture. And in Russian, it's maybe a little bit more straightforward than it is in English, where we have so many different Anglophone cultures around the globe that are flourishing simultaneously, even if they're not implicated in the same political agendas. Now, with Ukrainian versus Russian, a lot of people in Ukraine actually judged us for including Russian language Ukrainian poets in the anthology in 2017. And some of these poets were not even necessarily super pro-Ukrainian. Some of them had very ambiguous attitudes to express. And there were questions about why we included those voices. And I think we did it because it presents a more authentic picture of the challenges and the world we live in as Ukrainian speakers, but also of this war, of the language of the war for different types of people coming from very different backgrounds. So I think leaving out certain voices is doing a disservice to the project, and also it's dishonest. It's a chorus of voices, and there can be voices that are not cohering to the same political goals, but they nevertheless add depth and dimension to the overall project.
I see, yes. So maybe to conclude, where do you see now during the war and hopefully quite soon after the war, literary life going in Ukraine?
This is a great question. And I think one quote I really like from Alexander Hamon is, never waste a crisis. So I think this is true for a lot of Ukrainian poets and writers. I think it's a fact that many people who would be writing normally are not writing right now, because their writing routines and their whole lives have been so badly disrupted, and they're often rendered speechless by these constant events. And many people are just really applying themselves to volunteering efforts or to reporting, or to actually, some writers are in the war zone and fighting, even if they're not officially enlisted in the in Ukraine's armed forces. They're part of the what's called the territorial defense units. So there are these informal defenders who actually are especially targeted by the Russian army as being people who are not obligated to fight and to serve, but do so regardless of not having orders. And so they are more likely to be identified as nationalist Nazis who are killing the Russian soldiers that are just peacefully liberating Ukraine. So a lot of people are not writing right now, but people who are abroad, who are associated with the Ukrainian literary community, have been incredibly active. And I think it's because they're suffering this great trauma at a distance. But at the same time, they have the resource of time, of energy, to spend time on their writing.
Yes.
What I think will happen in the coming years is that there will be an avalanche of amazing writing being produced. There are people who are just starting out their paths, their journeys as writers and poets right now, and these will be the formative years for them. But also the more mature poets will, I think, it's horrible to say this, but I think they will flourish as artists down the road from having survive this disruptive experience. And I think it's because in the disruptive experiences like these that there are these chasms or voids opening up where you can go really deep into a particular situation, into a vision or a perspective. So in these moments of suffering and pain, as the Greeks like to say, that's when the truth reveals itself. And I'm generally very optimistic about Ukrainian literature. I'm much less optimistic about the actual destruction of the Ukrainian cities, the extent to which Ukrainians will be able to return to their normal lives over the next decade. I think a lot of people will just be forced to flee and stay abroad forever. And that, I think, is also going to be an interesting phenomenon, because a lot of Ukrainians will be learning foreign languages much better. So what I expect will happen is that there will be more of these bilingual hybrid poets and writers who are between worlds and who enjoy these mediating identities, seeing both perspectives or seeing multiple perspectives at the same time and being able to navigate between them. And I think that also adds depth and dimension to writing when you can actually take the perspective of people who are strangers and who are cultural others and explain or describe or reflect on your own culture from that new perspective.
Yes. Oksana Maksymchuk, with this in mind, I would like to extend my welcome remarks at the beginning to a very sincere and hope and invitation, in fact, that whenever and under which circumstances of your choice you would like to tell Canadian listeners from coast to coast, from the Atlantic to the Pacific, something about new Ukrainian creative writing, be it fiction, be it short stories, be it critical essays, and poetry in particular, you would be most, most welcome. It would be wonderful if we could have you again on our show with a topic of your choice, which is burning, so to speak, in your mind and which deserves your very special attention. We would love to bring it to the attention of our listeners. But for now, I am so thankful to this.
Thank you so much.
Very special moment.
I think often what happens with poets is that they work in solitude, and also their work is not widely read or widely understood. So this is very special.
Yes, all the best to you personally and to your family. And I say goodbye, knowing that there will be a chance for us to have you again here on our show.
Women in Translation is an audio series showcasing the richness of European women authors, translators, and more. This series is executive produced by Tropica Europe Radio. Please sign up at our website to stay informed about upcoming shows. Thanks for listening.